CliffCentral.com.
Ah, yes. Good morning, everybody. I'm about to introduce you to our co-host for the morning. I'll tell you who that is in just a second. But here is the talented and brilliant Simpiwe Mthethwa, who is in the studio in Johannesburg. Also in the studio in Johannesburg, and she's got reasons for that, is the great Celeste Ntuli. Look at her. There she is in all of her glory. One of South Africa's finest comics, one of our most successful acts, someone who has managed to make us laugh through all the good times and the bad, and she continues to do that. She's also one of the lead attractions for the upcoming roast of Kanyim Bao, which is going to take place on Comedy Central. And we heard all about that just the other day from none other than Mpo Pops. And I thought about you, Celeste, and I thought, oh, wouldn't it be nice to have her? But she's so famous and important, I'll bet you she's too busy to talk to us. And then guess what? They said, oh, there goes my lights. So, great.
Boom. Wow.
But she says she could do it. So I couldn't believe it. Your people told us you were free, you were available, and I was very, very happy about that. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. Although I'm straight from here, I'm going to the show. I'm shooting this beautiful show where women are asking men to marry them. Interesting.
Oh, wait, what? Wait. Women.
Yeah. It's called We He Say Yes. So women come in and they feel like it's been too long. Uh-huh. You know those men that pay lobola halfway and they, I'm coming back, uh-huh, and then it's 10 years down the line. He's never been back home with the rest of the cows.
Oh, my God.
Until they start the whole process over again. So you can just, you know, call your man. Or if you feel like you've been dating this person forever and they're not making any move. I mean, it's changing the narrative of, I mean, who must ask who to marry
them.
Yeah,
because obviously,
because at this point,
yeah, I mean, the tradition's always been that the man would ask the woman, but there are so many pathetic men around these days. And I'm not being nasty to my own sex here, but I'm, you know, men are not like they used to be. We used to hunt, we used to defend, we used to fight, we used to go to war, we used to be able to conquer and destroy and take control, and now we're mostly pussies. So.
So, oh, thank God. That language is allowed here. Yeah,
I'm free. Oh, yeah. You know, well, the fact is, I know this because some of my friends who are guys are looking for dates and they complain about the women that are available. And then some of the friends of mine who are girls, they complain about the quality of the guys that are out there. So, I mean, it's good that there's a show like this.
Yeah, and I think because I did this, what is this? Our Perfect Wedding and The Gift of Love.
Yes.
So for some reason, as a single person,
yes,
God has been giving me these beautiful love shows.
Mm-hmm.
Hence, I've gotten to understand what is the problem. I think we all dream of that old school love.
Yeah.
But we don't want the responsibility that came with that old school love. The sustainability of marriages in our parents was based on so much sacrifices that we are both parties, men and women, are not willing to do.
That's
but
right.
We still want the fairy tale. I think that's the problem.
Yeah, and
we
and
all want.
Yes.
And we see the fairy. We see the fairy tale in other people's marriages, and we see how great some people's relationships look from the outside, but we don't see the work they put in to keep it going, and that's the tough part.
Exactly. And also for someone like me, everyone asks me, I think I haven't been in a serious relationship in that. Well, I have. Well, but I haven't been successful. It's always been dating.
Same here.
We're going somewhere, back to searching.
Yeah. No, same here. Same here. I mean,
not the one. Don't worry.
No, you
not
know,
the one.
I don't look at any of it as success or failure, though, because I don't know. These days, I would rather be in a short-lived, unsuccessful relationship where you don't mess each other around and like take 6 or 7 years to decide that you actually don't want to be together. To me, be with each other for a short while. Oh, look in the mirror one day, look at the person you're with, go, don't know if this is working. It's time for us to maybe part ways. Then at least you're not wasting each other's time if that person does want to settle down. I mean, I remember one of my ex-girlfriends said to me once, yeah, where are we going? So I said to her, well, what do you mean? I'm going to work just now. And she didn't think that was funny.
What?
And then I said, I said to her, what are you talking about? She's like, well, you know, and this is about what, 8 years or maybe more ago. My biological clock is ticking. So she didn't really sound like that, by the way. I just like to make it sound like she was an idiot and ignoramus. So then I said to her, what are you talking about? She's like, well, you know, the clock is ticking. I'm I know what this is. You want to have kids.
That's the equivalent to what are we?
Yeah,
after
right.
You've met someone and you spent the night and you're like, so what are we? And
oh,
they're
God.
Like humans.
Yeah.
You see?
Right.
Real answers to the questions you never want to ask anyway.
But isn't it sad, Celeste, that now we have to use Tinder, we have to use reality TV shows. People are so useless at dating. They're so bad. They've lost the ability to do this, that now they need all this other stuff, technology and entertainment and someone like you hosting the show to help them get together. It's pathetic.
Gareth, never ever take any love show ever. Like, you're like pathetic.
It is pathetic.
You don't even feel for them. Like, your emotions are like, uh-uh. Okay. Thank you, number one, for validating my past relationships.
Uh-huh.
They've been short-lived, but they've been meaningful.
Right.
So that's why I take them for what they are, because I'm grateful that I've never had a relationship where I look at back and say, what have I learned here? And I feel like I've wasted my time. There's always something
sure.
I've learned, growth. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Also, I think we underestimate, more especially from a woman point of view. I know we're living in a, you know, woman power and everything else.
Sure.
I think there's a level of, as women, we haven't gotten ourselves in a space where we are honest with ourselves. Because
mm-hmm.
as much as you can be in a disadvantaged situation, but you still need to be responsible for your own freedom and expression. When it comes to relationships, all women assume they were done wrong. Sometimes, the problem was you, you know, and you must go back to that relationship and say, like, my past relationship, I realized that I wasn't ready.
Yeah.
Like, my focus was more on my work. I realized how much I didn't sacrifice for that relationship. I didn't change any international flights, no planes, no travels.
Yeah.
I met the guy, but my plans were exactly what I did. I didn't fit him in.
That sounds familiar.
Now, this is my doing. You know what I mean? And then we quickly to assume that, oh, this guy, you know what? But I realized later that actually I didn't do much work. I just existed and gave my VJJ. And
well,
I thought that was enough.
Well, you know, it should be. But the fact is, to go back to your point, like, there are a lot of men who are just not capable of making decisions these days. They've been, and in South
Definitely.
Africa, we've got two versions of these kinds of wimpy men. They're the kinds that the mother has helped them throughout their life, and they're mommy's boys, and they can't make a decision for themselves. And we know that's a big problem. We know that's a problem with a lot of these guys who look successful, but they still, mommy has to okay everything they do, you know?
Yeah.
There's a lot of that. And this goes across black, white, old, young, rich, poor. There are a lot of these mommy's boys, and they're pathetic, and they can't make a decision. And unless their mother helps them with everything, they're useless, right? You know those people.
I know.
The other kind
I know.
Are just the ones who are useless with women. They have no confidence. They have no backbone. They're terribly insecure. And there's nothing about those kinds of guys that turns a woman on. Nothing. I've never met a woman who said, you know what I'd like? I'd like my man to be weaker. I've never met a woman who said, you know what I want? I want a man who just does exactly what he's told and is completely harmless and pathetic, and I can order him around. There's no, even the most tough, hardcore woman in the world who's like a proper feminist and out there in the front lines and has a powerful job and believes in herself, even those women, they want a man who can occasionally meet them at the same level, if not all the time meet them at the same level. Otherwise, they don't respect them.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, you're still a woman. I always say this, that as much as I work for myself, I love my work. And this whole thing of, if you are working and making money for yourself, automatically you don't need a man. No,
which
I do.
Is,
I just want salary as well. Like, I just want to be paid as well.
No.
But the whole thing of equating that, if you sustain yourself and you can work for yourself, therefore you don't need a man. People don't understand. When I'm home, I need a man. I don't even want to change the globe. I don't want to change the tire. I don't want to do anything. Mm. I want that strong man. I want to be like, yes. Oh, you yes. know, because that's my moment where I'm all oh.
right.
Because, you know,
yeah, I
24/7, I'm with the comics. I'm with the comedians.
I know. I know a woman, and you are in a very male space. So you
very
yeah. You have to kind of level up to not let the guys walk all over you, and none of those guys are going to give you a chance if you don't stand up for yourself. So you know yeah. all about yeah. that. But I do want to ask you both, because I saw an episode of this for the first time last week. Was it on last week, Thursday or Friday? I put on The Real Housewives of Cape Town.
Oh, oh wow. You watched the reality.
Hold on.
Have you watched that before us?
So let me explain, because normally I would never watch a show like this, but I was going through the channels. And it was cold, and I was sitting there, and I had the fire going, and I was like, okay, I'm gonna give this show a try so that I can talk to Simpiwe about it, because Simpiwe I knew would have something to say about this show. So I'm like, all right, well, this for the next half hour, I'm gonna consider this research. I'm gonna watch this show and pay attention. Well, do they have a horrible, horrible collection of women on there? The most awful, just the most self-absorbed, materialistic, fake, irritating people I've ever seen in my life. Just horrible. The first woman is like this very, and I don't know, these people might be nice off screen, because you and I know, Celeste, there are lots of people that, you know, they're forced to play a role on camera, but then off camera they're not so bad. So I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt. But the way the show has shown these people, this one woman is just this fake. The first episode is her getting fucking Botox in her lips, and she's got this horrible daughter who's asking her for money the whole time, and they go shopping together, and then she does this line, which whenever anyone says this to you, you know you've got a big problem on your hands as a guy. She goes, people always see me and my daughter out, and they think we're sisters. And she's got this terrible, she's just fake. And then she's got her black friend. I mean, she might be her friend, but this is a white woman who looks like a Barbie. And she's like, call us black and white Barbie. And then the black friend is also one of the housewives. And she's got this husband who she just doesn't have any respect for. And she's dolled up to the nines with like nails out to fucking here. You know, I don't know how she opens a car door, any of that stuff, because everything for her must be really difficult to do with these. These nails are seven times longer than they should be. And then there's an Indian woman or a I can't work out if she's a Indian or colored woman. It's not important, but she is so dismissive of her husband. Like, she shows him in the picture, but he has to bring her coffee in bed. She's lying there in bed, and she's like, I don't feel like getting up today. And I look at these three, and the other two I'm not even going to talk about, you, because there are another three that I didn't even see that much. I couldn't stop. I mean, after that, I was like, I'm in for the whole episode. And and this collection of just these first three I've described to you are like the most off-putting women. And I thought to myself, they have money, right? That's why they're on this show, because the Real Housewives have to have money. It's this whole thing. It's based on this format from America. But I looked at these three and I thought, if you put a gun to my head, I wouldn't want to marry them. Even if they each gave me all of their money as part of the deal, I still wouldn't want to be around them. I would much rather be with someone who looked more average, who had a personality, a sense of humor, didn't take themselves so seriously, wasn't so self-absorbed, wasn't so irritating and annoying. I mean, these are the most awful, awful people, I cannot tell you. Please watch the show if you haven't seen it and tell me what you think. But if you have seen it.
But I haven't seen it, but the format is the same. Mm-hmm. And it's very unfortunate that we've taken this as these are the women. Like, everyone wants to be a housewife for this reason. Because what they show is opulent, if it is opulent, if whatever you call it.
Sure.
But it's just the splash of money and splash of lifestyle. But the thing is, the funny thing is, most men with money prefer those women, because they hardly put up anything.
They're like no low maintenance.
That is really challenging to them.
Yeah.
They don't care whether you go shop for like a whatever money, go and say, me and my daughter. They don't really care. All they care about is that their egos are polished and properly, you know, nest for some time. But the thing is, most men love those women. That's the thing. That's why we even have a genre of housewives, because what most men love as housewives.
But the men are not watching those shows. It's not the men watching those shows.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, of course not.
It is made for us to look like we want to be those women. Oh. It's an influence to all women to stop with this feminist fight and understanding whether you want to have your dream ambition. Just be prim and proper, pretty, be a Barbie doll and marry a rich guy. That's what these shows are for.
You know.
But Gareth, I watched the trailer, and just from the trailer alone, I was like, I'm not watching this. I've watched enough Real Housewives. What's what to tell you, which is a good one and which is one that I'm not going to miss out. And the reason why I could tell that this was not going to be a good one, it's Cape Town. Like, Cape Town doesn't have drama. It's all about let's just relax and chillax and be about the beautiful ocean that's right ahead of us. Mm-hmm. Whereas what gets us into these reality shows is the drama. Like, you want people to be like, yeah, I'm from the ghetto and I have money, and this is why I have the Cardi B long nails, and you can't tell me nothing. That's why people watch it, because then they meet Sophia, and Sophia's like, oh my gosh, is this you?
But that's why people watched Kumbule Kaya, because you knew that was going to be huge, heavy drama, right? Compared to this shit. And it's just like, it's all the same format. And I wonder why. Like, if you're a happy, contented, rich woman who's being catered to, your every need is being looked after by your rich husband, or you've made your own money, whichever it is, why you'd want to be on a show like this? It can't be good for anyone's reputation. I mean, no one's been on a show like that, and everyone afterwards has had more respect for them.
Well, of course. Well, but they do still have the money. Some people don't care much about respect these days.
They just care about money.
If you're going to put more zeros on them.
Right.
And like Simpio is saying, what is going to kill the Cape Town one is because Cape Town is pretending to be Europe. Meanwhile, these shows format are working on ghetto, you know?
Yes.
So subconsciously, Cape Townians feel like, yes, we are. They're like Kanyimbao. They're like, we are light, but we are not here. We are in South Africa, but we are not. We are in Europe. In our minds.
But let's not forget, Cape Town, despite all that you've said, which is absolutely true, Cape Town is also a way more dangerous place than anywhere else in South Africa. The gangsterism there is hardcore. You know, you got more drugs, I reckon, in Cape Town than you do in Joburg.
The irony. Oh, definitely you will have more drugs. There's more money and more white people having other drugs. Yeah. And of course.
And the Nyaupe ones as well.
And the Nyaupe one. We have our cheaper version. The cocaine is much.
Colour Bottle can't get this.
Yeah.
But what a.
Get high on it.
What a show. I mean, I'm not going to watch another episode of this, but it was interesting to see because, you kind of forget how. Like, to some people, as you said, Celeste, this is the most important thing. As long as there's money in the bank, they think that that's all that's important, and good for them. If you could be that superficial in your life, awesome. I respect you because at least you know what you're all about. You're not one of those people who's, you know, trying to be more than you are. You're not trying to figure out the secrets of the universe. You don't care about, you know, the grand philosophy of this, or you're not trying to write a 550-page novel. You're just trying to spend money that you earned or that your husband earned. You just go out there and you buy clothes. That's fine. That's enough.
But I will say, also, like, for ladies that live in that world, their priorities are quite different. You know, it's all about being in the A-list circle. And being on a show like this, I mean, we didn't know any of the women you're talking about, and now we know them. And so that means they're going to start getting invited to more events, so we're going to see more of them.
Okay.
Before you know it, they're going to get even more brand deals and sponsorships, because now they have a following and now they have influence. So for them, they are... Career-wise, they're climbing up the ladder. Somebody knows them now.
This is the main reason why I believe art and entertainment industry must have two departments, the artists and the influencers.
Yes, different things.
Because the thing is, whenever they say they're climbing up the ladder, it is assumably in the entertainment space. Meanwhile, there's no contribution artistically.
Right.
That they do. They just hear because they are known and famous, which is good for them, but it's horrible for us. It's horrible for the craft. It's horrible for what we're trying to say and share.
I think you've just made the most sense of anybody who's tried to evaluate that space for the longest time, because we're so confused because of things like the Kardashians, you know? Before
those are influencers.
Correct. Before that, we knew what people were doing on a stage or on a screen because they could sing, they could dance, they could make people laugh, they could act. There was a skill involved. There was a skill. There was a craft. There was something that you had to learn. You couldn't just go on TV and sing or dance. Now, of course, thanks to reality TV and thanks to these people who are influencers and social media, those people are confused for the entertainers. And then, you know, invariably brands and the entertainment business as a whole is disappointed when these people turn out to be very, very boring and unskilled.
And bad.
Bad.
You, have you ever tried to be in a production or set with an influencer?
Ugh.
After all the influence, except for the time when they say action, there's no influence. You're like, why are you here? Because this is the core. This is the crux of why you're here. And that's why we have this whole horrible umbrella of look into entertainment space. And that's why even parents are reluctant to influence kids to do craft and art. I think we take it for granted how much art is important. I understand that the influencing part makes money, whatever it is.
They have their role.
I think, like I say, I think we should have two departments. Art and entertainment, those who are influencers, be an influencer. And then we leave the space. Like, for example, awards. We must just have awards that are for artists and then awards for influencers.
Right.
Yeah.
And stop hiring.
And this will work.
Stop hiring influencers for jobs you need artists for, and stop hiring artists for the influencer
artists
jobs.
Because they
want you, for example, oh, Celeste, we want you to do this, but can you tweet this or can you post it? And you're like, no. You pay me to be on the stage to make people laugh. That's my job. Or if you need me to do this or that or the other, I can do these things because these are my skills. But don't get me confused with someone who tweets. Right?
Thank you.
And I think the same goes obviously for these influencers, because they're not good at anything except the social media aspect of this. And usually it's a very short-lived thing. And I know so many people have been hired in jobs in the entertainment industry because they've got a following on social media, but they're shit at everything. So someone follows them, but they actually don't have a skill. They don't have any ability. They sit down in a room with them. You'll tear your hair out. You'll be so bored.
Listen, and I love the fact that the recent stuff that we've been seeing online, more especially Netflix movies, there have been people with no numbers, with no following, but they give us the most amazing productions. And I love, and I applaud the acting space for that, because recently it has been about numbers and not about telling the story, which is why you look at the thing, you're like, why this horrible acting? Who put these people together? But you realize it's because of the numbers. But when it's time to sell, then they use the real artist.
Right.
And I love what you said about being used as an influencer when you're an artist, because I've been getting a lot quite lately, like, oh God, I'm not an influencer. I'm not an influencer.
You must take a picture with the cup on the right side and you're like, hi.
Oh, yeah, please. Do me a favor.
Because the thing is, what happens when I get those jobs, I tend to do a little bit of creativity. I can't just post. It's not in me. I need to give you the story that I'm saying. I don't care whether it's a product from a brand or whatever. That's not a point. The point is, when you are faced to be given something to say, can you say this? Can you share this information? It's up to me to create an artistic way of transforming this information, of sharing this information.
You don't just go on a stage. You probably could, but you just don't walk onto a stage and start a show winging it just because you know you have hundreds of thousands of followers who will post stuff. You get on. You've figured out every line. You've thought about every joke. You've thought about every response that you might have. There's a plan. That's why people would hire you, for everything from the kind of very strict corporate event to a wacky, completely insane comedy festival where you're allowed to do whatever you want, right?
Yeah. And it's a beautiful process too. I think we've taken out the whole beauty of of seeing someone doing their thing very well. I don't do radio. But the minute people say Cliff Central, damn, you know, you guys have been doing this. We've right. been listening to you. It's not about just having a mic in front of you. It's the skill that you put behind. That's why you Cliff. That's why you Garrett Cliff. It's because of the reason of what you say. And what you're saying, it's well thought of. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there's a process to the thing. That's why we have different genres. And well, now, because we have numbers, they just ask you, do you want to be on radio or you want to be on TV? Because of the numbers.
Yeah.
Not because you have something to say.
Well, I want to just give you a couple of props here, because it's been a while since we've had you on the show. And people who people who are not familiar, I mean, you are you're called the Queen of Zulu Comedy, but you are the first local female comic to record a one-woman show DVD. I know this is years ago, but, I mean, it's worth reflecting on this stuff, right?
Yeah.
And you did study entertainment, so that's where you developed your skill, which we're talking about at the moment. You've been an actress in many different shows, but in Zanzi's telenovela Isibaya, I remember that, very, very important. Very successful show. That was all the way back in 2013, right?
Yeah, we've been through, I did that for 8 years, which is why I'm taking a bit of a break when it comes to soapies, and I'm concentrating more on comedy.
Yes.
Because I took 8 years off my... And yeah, I spent my 30s acting like a 40-year-old, so I'm not... I missed myself.
Wow. So they made you act, like someone older than you were.
Older, rural, polygamist relationship.
Yes.
Like, I was nothing like that woman, but I understood her. I had to understand her, which is why I enjoyed playing her so much, because it took me, it's something that it's totally different. Like, I had to go and ask a woman that was on a polygamous relationship to make me understand what do they feel like, so that I can be able to portray the character better. Because otherwise I was going to judge the character, knowing Celeste.
Yes, you know? Of course.
Like, why would she do that? But because I had to embrace her and understand her and like her and know her and know why, all the whys of her life, I had to go and ask and find out. And quite honestly, I'm sitting here today, that show changed my perspective when it comes to polygamous relationship, more especially in a cultural sense, because I got to understand why most women would like it that way. There are deeper reasoning beyond just saying men want four women or three wives. There's a sense of family. Well, when it's done right, let me emphasize that.
So
when it's done right.
I mean, it's a fascinating discussion, and we've spoken to people who like Pateki de Holomisa from the traditional leaders, but I haven't actually had a woman on to describe it from her point of view. First of all, where did you know somebody already, or did you have to go and find somebody who lives in a family like that? And how did you start the conversation? Because they're also going to think, this woman's here because she wants to make a mockery of our situation.
Luckily for me, I'm from the rural areas, so she was not far off because I'm a rural girl.
Where were you from? Where are you from?
Mpangeni, anyway.
Okay.
And when I say rural,
that's Zululand.
Yeah, proper. I never went to white schools. I like went to township schools, and those were more like white schools.
Yeah.
There's a bit of a swag.
I drove through Pongola the other day, and I saw like these kids walking, because it was a Friday, and I saw them walking back from school. And you see where people live, because their houses are dotted along the landscape, and you know, you see the cows and you see the goats and you see like how people live in that part of KZN. And Mpangeni is about as like, that's rural stuff. There's no, you know, you don't have massive supermarkets and shopping malls. You've got like little strip malls, little shops, little general dealers, and you've got people selling stuff, like vendors selling stuff under, you know, those little sort of, what do they call them?
Shelters.
And I thought about these kids walking, and I wondered, like, I'm pretty sure that there are kids in that part of the country who will walk 20 kilometers to and 20 kilometers back from school every day. Not even think about
it. But because my parents were those tuck shop people, but my mom was a nurse, and my mom comes from a family of 11, and they also grew up in rural areas. Yes, so I have come from a huge family. That's why they had to stay in the rural areas, because there's eight of us in my family. Mm. So they had 8 kids. So I grew up with a family of 10 and possibly 15, including the people that were helping and the people that were staying from time to time.
Sure.
So my experience of rural spaces is much more. I like how people, whenever they view rural life that has no bougie in it, as suffering. But the minute people have money, they go to the Kruger National Park to find quietness. I'm like, that's where I grew up.
Yeah.
Why are you calling that suffering? People here in the cities take time off on Saturday to go hike.
Right.
But people were laughing at us for walking up and down the mountain. It's exactly what I've been doing, which is why I'm 42 and I have such lovely body, because of that walking up and down. What do you mean? So whenever people come to me and ask me to play township something, I'm like, I never grew up in a township.
Mm.
I know that rural life. I know that obviously we were better off in my family. We were not rich, but because of where we're staying and both my parents were working and they're working for themselves, it was they took care of us. It was not lavish, but we had what we needed.
But
so
there's something beautiful about growing up in that kind of environment, because while you have the tradition and a lot of people will say, oh, well, it's very backward for women and all of the, you know, because there's all these woke people now who think that they know all the answers and that they can just, they can wipe away history with one gesture. It's rude. The people in those rural areas are at least living closer to the way that their ancestors have for hundreds and hundreds of years. They know the land.
Thank you.
They know each other.
Thank you.
They speak the language. There is a sense of community, and people actually have a purpose. They wake up in the morning. They've got things to do, people to see, places to go. They've got families to look after. It's a life. It's not like the life we have in cities, where you have work and you have home, and the two actually don't mix very well. And sometimes home is miserable because you know you can't afford this or you can't afford that. In a rural area, you grow your own food. You have to walk to where you're going. People have conversations. They have time. There's a lot about that that's not this thing that people feel they need to look down on rural people. Mm-hmm. You know, there's this superiority complex that city people have over themselves, that they somehow are better.
And that's why I always say, if you want to understand what is a rural life, it's an urban life with no recognition. It's like suburbs. Because people are saying to me, why would you stay? Because my house, like, as much as I'm single, I stay with my sister and my family from time to time, because I live in a very bigger space than what I supposedly need to live in.
Sure.
But I'm telling you, it's purely because I want to see the trees. I want to go out in the morning.
Yes.
There's a level of connecting with nature daily that centers one and balances your thoughts and balances who you are. I mean, people take it for granted why the land was stolen in the first place. You need all of these things. And to look down upon people who are in rural spaces is the crazy thing.
Yeah.
So when I grew up in those rural, I had those women who were in a polygamous relationship, though I was not close to them, but I will see it. I know of people. I went to a wedding, to MC a wedding that was of a polygamous relationship.
Mm-hmm.
The guy was marrying someone and introducing the next wife that is going to marry the next year.
Right.
And I was an MC and he was well off. So going back to my point that I had to ask that lady, it was not that difficult for me to engage, because I came from a space of understanding the culture. I was not asking from a space of being an actress in Joburg, wanting to know this and find out and milk the information. I just wanted to know sincerely from her emotionally, how has it been for her?
Right.
You know, whether in a polygamous relationship or not in a polygamous relationship, women had been oppressed in some time. But I listened to my mom's stories, who grew up in the 60s. My mom in the 60s had the most fascinating lifestyle that I have. My mom was a ballroom dancer, a tennis player in the rural areas, and the nurse. Yes, there was no TV. They had activities. That's how she met my father, because my father had a band with his brother. So you see, they had a life. When you listen to what they got up to day to day, you understand how much their brains, that's why they could create their own work and have tuck shops and have that prime secondary economy. Yeah, sustain themselves.
Didn't need to go and find a job and beg for a job from someone else. They found a way to make themselves useful.
which is what I took from my dad. Like, I can't, I was always, you know, quitting because I couldn't stand the format of just having a job. I knew that definitely, surely there's something that I can create and do for myself. And, you know, even when I discovered that I could do comedy, I've always known that because of my parents. So I think, it's the undertones of misunderstanding, even in development. The government is not really developing the rural areas.
No, they don't.
Because they believe people who live there are just...
They're just waiting for their chance to come to the city. That's what they think.
Listen, most of us, we wish the city was closer to home.
Sure. But there's a kind of the quality of life there that we mustn't disregard just because we think we've figured out something better. So I want to just move on to some headlines quickly this morning and hear what you have to say about these things. First of all, the Senzo Miua trial is falling apart. So Advocate Defo, I don't know if you've been paying attention, but yesterday he withdrew as legal counsel. And it sounds like he is talking like a conspiracy theorist. He's like, they don't want me to defend these guys. They. He's talking about these mysterious people who are trying to influence things from the outside. And who knows? He may know a whole lot more than he's telling us. But if he doesn't tell us, then we can't protect him and we can't protect these people who've been accused of the murder. We don't know whether they're all guilty, whether some of them are guilty, whether none of them are guilty. We don't know anything about the details of this, and it's all very, very sketchy. And I remember when Senzo was murdered, and we all thought, oh, that's terrible, what a tragedy. But nobody bothered to look into any of the details for so many years. And now suddenly we're trying to scratch around, find out what really happened. Poor old Kelly's getting so much nonsense over this too. And whether you're a fan of hers or not, it seems to me that like people just want a scapegoat. They want to blame this on one person. They want to say that person is responsible. Whether it's the Advocate Tefo in this case, whether it's Kelly Kumalo, whether it's one of these people in the house who was there suspiciously that night, whether, you know, there are high and mighty and important people in politics who were involved, because everyone's got a theory. Do you have any theory as to why this is all going so crazy?
All I know is that it is crazy. For what it is. Like, when you listen to it, it's like, damn, it's a movie. It's one of those things where I think we are forced to listen to everyone who's that, like, closely involved, if you are interested to the story, you know. Because that's just way too much. Obviously, in no way I'm saying there's a problem with Kelly, or I don't know. Like, guys, at this point, it's just me as a comedian. I'm saying this is the most interesting. That's why it is news.
Sure.
Because you can't ignore other parts as well, as much as on both sides.
Right.
Like, when they say they have two dockets, there's no way you're like,
Really? The whole thing is just, you know? and it shows you what a disastrous state the police are in. I mean, they don't know what's going on. The police are completely out of their depth.
I think that's what it comes down to, our judiciary and our justice system as a whole, and our police department.
Yeah.
There's just way too many stuff to fix. It's like, why wouldn't they do this and the other and that?
Too many questions
on both sides. All I can say is that this is a movie. They've just made a documentary, and it is a movie that someone will, we will understand this years later, what was up. But I don't think, in my opinion, I doubt if people in the house, as far as I've listened, I'm like, I don't know, man. There's something missing, but I don't think we know exactly enough to point the finger, basically.
Yeah, you know, I don't know if we're ever going to get a solution to this. I don't know if anyone's going to really get to the bottom of it, because it's been so long now. The longer you leave these things, the more confusing they become.
And also, it's a very unfortunate one that this case is like many other cases.
Yeah.
Most people are like, it's only the famous faces in this one, but it's similar to my neighbor. It's similar to my story. It's similar to the story that I've known. And I think bottom line is our justice system. our police service needs to, there's a lot of fixing to do.
Somebody,
on those port departments.
Somebody wants to know, Simpiwe, is that a porta potty in the background of your shot there? No, it's not. It's an actual. It's a little locker. But it looks like it could be in the distance, right, Simpiwe? I mean, it would be far behind you if that was a porta potty. But it does look the same shape.
Yeah. Trying to look cute, trying to give you aesthetics, you know.
So here's an interesting story. Twitter has slumped into the red again, their shares, because Elon Musk has walked away. Now, I heard, again, I've got to stop watching TV. I watched a little bit of TV last night, and I saw the SABC had a tech expert on, who's about as expert as my left foot, talking about why they think that Elon Musk has walked away from the Twitter deal. And it was clear from the beginning that they brought this person on, and this guy was horribly out of his depth. He had no idea of how it worked, and he's one of their technical people. So,
but I mean, what is the how is the technical team at SABC?
No, exactly. I mean, SABC, really. If you're getting your info from them, you're in a lot of trouble. So Elon Musk has decided, based on the inability of Twitter to show just how much of what they do is fake, that he's decided it's not worth buying them for the supposed $52 a share that he offered them. Now, what he may have done here, there could be two other parts to this, which people aren't seeing because it's not so obvious. Mm-hmm. The one part is that if you wanted to liquidate some of your shares in Tesla, as a founder and as the CEO, you can't just do that, because then everybody else will be affected by it. The share price will drop. It'll cause panic in the markets. So what you do is you say you're going to buy something else, and then people are like, they're prepared for it. You know, it's like, for example, if a husband says to his wife, I need to draw R500,000 out of our account, which you didn't even know we had, but I'm buying you a ring for like 200,000 of that. Then she's like, oh, okay, well, then take the other 200, 300, and let's see what you can do with it and make more money for us. So he needed to do that. That's part of what was going on. And I've simplified it, but there's a lot more complicated an explanation for this. And essentially, he gave himself somewhere around $8 billion in liquid capital, which he can now move around to buy other things. So that's part of what he was doing there. And by offering Twitter money, he was able to liquidate some of those Tesla shares. The other thing is, he may actively have wanted to teach Twitter a lesson. We know he's been saying some things on Twitter about how, you know, the place isn't a forum for free speech. There's far too much censorship going on there. It's not an open platform. They treat people differently depending on your political views. And what he's essentially done is he's really shaken Twitter up so that now it's worth a lot less than it was when he made the first offer. So if his purpose was to just troll them and break the company down, he's done that. And if his purpose was to liquidate some capital so that he could buy other things, he's done that. Forget about the actual purchase of Twitter, because now they're saying, oh, no, we want to force you to buy us. So you imagine, again, to go back to the man and woman example, imagine you're a guy and you offer to marry a woman, and then the relationship doesn't look like it's built on truth or honesty. So you say to her, I've changed my mind. I don't want to. We're engaged, and you can keep the ring, which is worth $1 billion in this case, but I'm not going to spend 40 or 50 billion on you because I don't want us to get married. And then she goes, no, I'm going to force you to marry me. That's what Twitter's trying to do to him now. So not a very clever strategy. And they've all hired huge numbers of lawyers. Like, we're talking the biggest law firms in America to get involved in this. So this is not going to go away anytime soon. And it's worth watching. I think it's going to be fun to see what happens here.
It is interesting. And I'm like, damn, imagine if I could now afford to buy Twitter.
Well, he almost did. And you know,
that's all I'm thinking about. I'm like, this man can afford Twitter.
Yeah.
Whether or not, like, the fact that you can even make that, you know, request to buy it.
Yeah, the offer. Mm. Yeah,
absolutely. It's the offer, yes, the offer. The fact that he can make the offer for me is like, oh, Lord, how successful you have to be in life. Right. But I also understand that Twitter is going to get a hit when, because obviously after that talk, I don't tweet a lot.
No.
Because it becomes too much.
Yeah.
But I think if Twitter, what I can say is that if Twitter fails on this deal and they try to pick themselves up, forget about Elon Musk. Invest on Black Twitter.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
where your money is.
Yeah, sure.
No. The first thing they need to do is bring an edit button. If they can do that, they will win some people.
I must tell you, like Celeste, I've had my run-ins with Black Twitter before. It is an absolute waste of time to get involved with Black Twitter. There's no value there at all. None of those people have anything to offer. It's all just anger.
Oh, yeah. That's why I don't... Twitter people are angry. There's a lot of depression on Twitter.
Very angry. Like, very, very angry.
I don't tweet. I truly don't tweet because you waste your time.
Right.
Now they say, oh, yeah, Celeste, you are friends with Gareth.
Because
we all listen to you.
You pretend you love black people. You love white people. And like, what? Where did this come from?
What the hell?
I know.
So,
I don't care.
So here's another story. This is a good story. A couple accused of defrauding Eskom of millions of rands have been granted bail. Now, that's not the good story, but they managed to chase these people down. Their names are Mohammed Esop Muideen and his wife Raisa. They're charged with money laundering, corruption, and fraud. The charges relate to over 600 million rand in Eskom contracts. Authorities say that the case is part of efforts to unmask the people responsible for capturing Eskom. And they are after them. So the good news is that even though they've been granted bail, the bail's very, very high, so they can't run away to anywhere else. And they are on them. And they're going to find out where these people have put the money, and they're going to get the money back. Well, that's what they tell us. So we can only hope that they're being honest with us.
How do you get to 600 million is my thing. Like, how? I can't even steal 10 rands. Like, what do you mean?
Yeah, exactly.
How do you get to 600 million?
Celeste, are you joking? If you don't pay SARS for, even though they've done nothing to earn the money that you have, you get on stage, you make people laugh, people pay you. Straightforward. Mm-hmm. Why does SARS have to be involved in that? They want their 25 to 45%. And if you don't give it to them, then you go straight to jail. Here, 600 million stolen from the other side, the expense side of government. And these people have been doing it for years.
Nah.
This
Eskom story sounds like R. Kelly's story. There's so many people who must be arrested.
Many. Many.
Many people were involved. You can't do that by yourself. It can't be the couple. Who else was in this thing?
Yeah.
Well, we'll have to see. And then speaking of so much money, here's another 654 million rand of South African citrus fruit, which may be destroyed because the EU have made new cold treatment laws.
Oh, wow.
So South Africa's citrus industry faces more than 654 million rands worth of fruit, which was already on the way to Europe, that might have to be destroyed by authorities on that side. Now, I wonder who pays the price for that, because you imagine if you've sent 654 million rands worth of fruit, that is a shit ton of fruit. If you've sent that to Europe and now they've made a new law, which means they're going to destroy it, then they must pay for it, right?
I don't understand. What is this law?
All right. So apparently the EU's Standing Committee on Plants, Animals, Food and Feed, it's a bunch of bureaucrats, have got together and they voted in a new requirement that will force Southern African countries to implement something called extreme cold treatment to to tackle something called a false coddling moth. It's a creature that supposedly lives in avocados, maize, citrus fruit, a whole lot of things, making its small and inconspicuous eggs a feared contaminant in fruit shipments. So what they've decided to do is they make the stuff extremely, extremely cold so it kills the eggs, and then on the other side you thaw it out and then you can eat the fruit. But I don't like the sound of this just because the fruit will be horrible. If you freeze something and then you unfreeze it, we all know what that does to it, right?
Mm.
I don't think they're going to destroy them. I always visit my sister in France.
Hmm?
The fruits, all of them are written at the supermarket from South Africa. It was the first time I'm like, wow, there's no made in China here. Yeah. I didn't even know that South Africa makes such beautiful cherries.
Yeah, we don't get any of it. Goes straight away. It goes there, yeah.
We get them. Yeah, they're expensive somewhere in Woolworths. I'm telling you, when I get the, it's the most beautiful fruits. Like they ship the most amazing, juiciest, sweetest fruits, and they're written at the thing.
Here's the problem, right? So this moth, which supposedly they've discovered now is a problem. And I mean, look, we're always discovering new things. So far, people have lived if they ate some of the moth's eggs. They're still alive. And if they didn't, then they were weak and they were going to go anyway. It's the same as COVID. So here's the deal. Over the past 3 years, South Africa has registered only 19 of these incidents with this moth. Only 19.
Wow.
So little.
In contrast to more than 240 incidents from Europe and other importing countries. The EU has not proposed regulations for those countries, but they're punishing us. Some bullshit.
I'm messing up things here.
What's your microphone?
The microphone.
Okay.
Do you hear me?
Don't break nothing, girl. Yeah. Yes, we can.
I'm not
hear
breaking
you.
Anything. Do you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay.
All right. Well, they must leave our fruit alone. How dare they?
No, that's just robbery, daylight robbery.
You think they're
lying? They're not going to destroy those fruits. They're going to chow them for free. No fruits are going to be destroyed. I don't think so.
Well, we can only hope because that's going to cost a fortune and they must pay if they want to destroy it. You want to destroy the stuff? You pay. Sorry. You made a new law? I mean, you pay.
How much of our, you know, it's so much for us to claim to be global citizens.
Hmm.
How much of our say do we have when it comes to these trades? Because I always read stuff about what the Europe said, what the G whatever said about the trade and the trading laws. How much of our contribution? Because we are also a part of this thing. We also are sending stuff.
Yeah.
So
we don't get a say.
Can't we have a bit of a say?
There's no say. No, none whatsoever. And you'd find that even if they gave us a chance to say something, they don't consider the opinions of Africans or African leaders as strongly as somebody who's from a European standpoint.
But that's
so
only,
I think that's also part of the issue.
They managed to get rid of their stupid Boris Johnson. We're still stuck with our Cyril Ramaphosa.
Oh, yeah. Two, 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 two.
Yeah, really.
All the way coming from Gareth and Cape Town. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Hey, everyone is scared to say anything about Ramaphosa. Okay, wait. Yeah. No. But I don't like that about the president. You know, I'm not comparing. All I'm saying is, as a comedian, we had a good time with Zuma.
We
were
had a great
saying
time
everything we want to say.
And by
here,
the way,
it's like, you can't say shit.
And he actually had a personality, and as much as a lot of people are pointing the finger at him and everybody wants to blame everything on him, Cyril was there the whole time. Don't tell me.
I always say.
Yeah, please.
It's a whole bunch. And I'm like, for me, it's been so many years. I think it's time. We need a new party.
Absolutely.
I don't know. But can they just?
Yeah,
it's okay now.
These guys must go.
Oh no!
Guys.
So you know what? Just quickly to throw this in. Oh yeah, go ahead, Simpiwe.
I just talking about a new party. So I was on YouTube, as you guys know, I love YouTube, and there was a YouTuber in the UK who ran for the elections, and they have like a top 10 whatnot, and they're like, oh, only the top 4 actually win. And in that year of running as a YouTuber, he was part of the top 4 elected. Was it last year in the elections? So, and he was trolling the entire time. He was just like, you know, my message is just for the vibes. Just for the vibes. And he got like so many votes from the young people. So maybe we do need a new party, you know, that's from the tubes. And we might get people actually voting. I'm just saying.
Well,
no, definitely we need a new blood in South Africa because, come on.
I saw two things that were really funny this week, and I'll mention them quickly. We can talk about them after 7 o'clock. But the first one was Pravin Gordhan got shouted out of Wits the other day. He was there for a conference.
I saw that.
Which
I
was great because he was also there from the beginning with all this corruption.
Yeah,
somehow he gets a clean bill of health and people are like, oh no, he's one of the good guys. He is not one of the good guys. He's been part of the rot from the beginning. He was Minister of Finance while it was happening. He was Minister of what do they call the state corporations, public enterprises. He's been in all of that stuff, and he's still in it now. So I don't believe Pravin. I don't know why he gets a free pass and everybody else gets thrown out, you know, and called a thief. He's also part of that. So then that was one thing that made me laugh, because I thought, good, you deserve it. And the other one was, I saw Nhlanhla Lux at a protest in Soweto the other day. And apparently the EFF, no, sorry, it wasn't a protest. It was after that tavern shooting, which everybody is still reeling from in Soweto, right? Mm-hmm. So apparently Nhlanhla Lux arrived, and then the EFF arrived later, like about 8 or 9 hours later. So Nhlanhla Lux says on the TV, he goes, the EFF guys are, they're only here because I came here first. And they're jealous because their wives like me more than they like
you.
Yeah,
them. I saw.
And your children have posters of me on your walls instead of you.
What the hell?
I was like, wow. That's some messed up shit going on.
You know, the thing is, this is a dicey, tricky issue, but I always go back, because I grew up in KZN when there was Nkata and AFP fights.
Yeah.
Both parties had what you call seemingly a reason behind their whatever thoughts of why things should have been like that time.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand that most Black South Africans, we grew up in that primary or secondary economy, they call it, tuck shops and stuff. And I understand why we need that. My problem is the Nhlanhla Lux thing, Tutula operation, it only leads to Black people, because now they talk about tribalism. Some people are talking about Tonga people, and that's my worry. I'm not saying I do not see that foreign Pakistanians and Somalians have taken the secondary economy. That needs to go back to the people in the township, definitely. But I'm saying the whole thing of saying the whole umbrella of the problems that we have in South Africa is only that is my problem, because I feel like we have bigger problems. And
Let's talk about this, because this is actually interesting, and we don't have to be careful on this show about what we say. It's good to throw opinions around. We're not saying anything that is criminal. Yeah. We're not encouraging anyone to hurt anyone else. But I think this is worth discussing, because there is a lot to take in here, and I don't think we completely understand how economics work in South Africa. But we'll talk about that in a second. I mean, you've got experience with a family who used to run one of these tech shops. And everybody has an opinion on this, whether you've grown up in townships, in the suburbs, or in the rural areas. There's something to say about this. And also, how do we feel about ourselves, and how do we feel about foreigners? Because that's part of it, too. But before we get to that, it is 7 o'clock. Got to take a quick break. And I see a message here from Shani, who says, you have to talk about the NASA story. Well, you're in luck, because we've got Professor David Block, who's our favorite astronomer. He's going to be joining us in a short while. Talk to him about what's going on in the heavens and this new telescope, which is sending back the most beautiful pictures to Earth of what is beyond our solar system. It is absolutely breathtaking. We'll be doing that in just a short while, Shani. Don't go away. Everybody, stick around. We've got lots more where that came from. CliffCentral.com.